Hey everybody, Dave Hodges here, host of The Common Sense Show. We are the show that is freeing America one enslaved mind at a time. So glad to be with you. And we have a really interesting show. And it's no secret. On this forum, you know that we've talked a lot about the trouble the dollar's in, the money supply. They got to keep printing. It's exploded over the time that Biden's been in office. And the way it's been explained to us by economists, that if they stop, you know, critical services will fail. In fact, most of the economy might fail. If they keep printing, they're going to reach a point of hyperinflation at some point, and the reserve currency status hangs in the balance. And so then we get into, oh, gee, we have to look at precious metals and what precious metals can do. And to talk about this today, we have Colin Plume from Noble Gold on with us, and we're going to be talking about the precious metals situation. And I don't think there could be a more timely interview given the recent economic report and the report on the money supply. Colin, welcome to the show. Glad you could join us.
Yeah, thank you, Dave. Yeah, I mean, obviously, inflation has been a conversation we've had for many years, and we've always said that it was underreported. But now, obviously, they're reporting 7.5% inflation, which is the highest it's been since 1982. And if anybody remembers what happened in the early 80s, is gold and silver went on a historic run, and the Hunt brothers tried to corner the silver market in the silver trade back in the early 80s. So it's a very timely sort of conversation that we're discussing precious metals and discussing items that have a limited supply, which typically do well during heavy inflationary periods.
Yeah, we definitely need escape hatches, that's for sure, because the dollar is a losing bet. I wanted to ask you one thing just off the top. How's the U.S. doing with its reserve currency status?
Yeah, I think it's been discussed a lot over the last years, but less so now with cryptocurrency and different types of money being exchanged. I think it's not as big as a conversation that we've seen over the last few years. It used to be, the Middle Eastern countries and China and Russia, they used to all discuss it. But it hasn't been in the conversation really as much as, at least from the circles that I'm swimming in, the news that I'm swimming in, it hasn't been discussed as much. But I do think that because everybody's monetizing their debt globally, everybody's sort of in the same position. I don't think any country could really make a claim for being the currency because everybody's sort of creating this this huge debt bubble. So I think the conversation has really moved towards people moving into other assets and diversifying and getting out of those dollars as much as they possibly can. I know the 10-year treasury finally hit 2% return over the last week, which is, it's sort of, you know, silly in a way that anybody would want to make 2% when inflation is 7.2%. But obviously there's, you know, large funds of money, endowments that do buy bonds. And so obviously they're going to gobble up those bonds at 2% just to kind of hedge their bet. But if you have all your money in cash or in bonds, obviously you're losing anywhere from 5, 6, 7, 8% on an annual basis, and really that's not going to keep up with your standard of living. So gold and silver are really at the forefront right now, and really everybody's coming out in droves and talking about how gold is undervalued. I was on a call with BlackRock. They were discussing that they think gold's going to move up 30% this year, which would be at gold at 2180 this year. There's a lot of conversation, and that's BlackRock's a pretty conservative company. Yeah, they're not a company that's just going to throw out numbers and just not see it come to fruition. They truly believe that gold is low. And from a supply point of view, from my side, being a company that sells the physical metal, I can tell you gold is very difficult to get. Silver is nearly impossible. It's not impossible to get, but in bulk, silver is extremely difficult to get. the cost of physical silver has continued to go up. So getting coins and bars, you know, is well above the price that we see, the street price. And that's usually a good indicator that the price is going to start to move. You know, silver still, you know, sitting in the mid 20s is still extremely undervalued for that metal.
Okay. I know historically, at least in recent years, there's been a big gap between gold and silver in terms of what its normal relationship should be with regard to proportionality. Is that changing back to what it should be, or what's going on with that?
I mean, we're at like 90 to 1, somewhere in that range. You know, it used to be 15 or 20 to 1. I don't think it ever gets back to 15 or 20 to 1 ratio. I mean, that would mean, you know, silver would be a few hundred dollars. And I don't think gold's going to just stay put while silver goes up to a few hundred dollars an ounce. So I don't think we'll see that ratio come back. But I think it is realistic to see silver break through its all-time high of $50. I don't think that's an unrealistic number just based on, I mean, if you look, whatever you believe about the political spectrum, we're moving to renewable energy. We're moving away from gas cars. You know, the country is moving in that direction right now, and silver is a big component there. There's not enough silver above ground right now to support all the solar panels, all the solar vehicles, everything in the silver world that we need. So, and that's if we melted down all the silver that investors have, all the silver, the numismatic silver, there's just not enough. So the demand is going to continue to skyrocket. So I like I like looking at gold and silver as insurance, because when you look at insurance, you don't want a lot of downside risk. You want more upside potential. Downside risk is low. And I think downside risk is low right now. I will talk about, I was going to mention a stock that I think has some downside risk, but also some incredible potential that I thought would be interesting and timely. But in gold and silver, I would say very, very strong potential up and very little downside potential risk for investors right now.
Okay, well, let's look at some economic numbers I've got in front of me here, and they speak to the folly of keeping the bulk of your money, or value, I should say, in your bank account. Your passbook account pays, what, 0.1%, I believe, our savings account, too. And,
right.
But the consumer price index went up this last month, 0.6%. That's an annual inflation rate of 7.5. And Colin, this is very conservative. So we're actually helping the government by using that number, because they've taken out critical CPI factors from the 70s, which would place the inflation rate at 15%. So we're being very conservative in this analysis for the listeners' value. So let's just look at that 7.5 versus 0.1. You're over 700% underwater here when you look at keeping money in the bank, what the CPI is doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think it sort of goes into something that I is sort of a passion for me, is there's this new movement now called the FIRE movement, mm-hmm. Dave, mm-hmm. which stands for Financial Independence Retire Early. And there's a great article on CNBC about a 41-year-old single mother of two retires on $850,000 in Tennessee. And, you know, it talks about her and her ability to save money, and it's it actually is an incredible story to hear about someone so young, so vigilant, you know, with their money. But the thing that is concerning is that if people read this article and truly believe that this is something that they can do, they will be misled, because $850,000 in the stock market today at 41 years old with two kids that I would assume are going to try to go to college, it's not enough money. And it's not realistic that money is going to keep up with inflation every year. We've had a lot of bull runs in the market. She's produced some great returns. But to think that is going to keep up with the standard of living, I mean, if you look at the inflation numbers, food costs were up 12% last month. Okay. So she needs, you know, obviously she's feeding three. She has to be able to make keep up with that return, right? Unless if she can't, then she's going to have to dip into, if she's not making 12% to feed herself, feed the family, then she's going to have to dip into the principal, right? And this is all based on, there's no other money coming in. There's no Social Security. She doesn't have a pension. So these articles, I know it seems great, and there's a big push in a lot of millennials that they think that, oh, I could live this life, but it's just not, it's not enough money to live. And especially this woman's very healthy. I mean, she could live to 100 years old. That means she's going to have to keep this $850,000 working for her and potentially those two kids for 20, 30 years for her for the next maybe 60 years.
Yeah, there you go.
Without earning an income. It's just not, it's not a realistic. So it is a passion of mine to really get out and talk about this. In the end of the article, she states that she is actually selling her services. She is actually teaching people how to become financially independent. She's making right now between $1,000 and $3,000 a month. So basically, she got an article in the newspaper or CNBC to promote her business, her side business, quote unquote. But that side business is really going to turn into her business. And I would assume in the next 5 to 10 years, she'll be exceeding the $150,000 she was making working for a university. And all of this will have come because of the idea that she was going to retire early. I don't think anyone realistically can do that. So it is a conversation to have, that it's important to save money. And I commend her for going in this direction. But I will say that unless she continues the side businesses and growing those, I don't think $850,000 is going to last if she lives to be 100 years old. It's just not realistic. It's not a realistic number. So
my feeling when I look at this, just looking at it from a historical point of view, I think she's over-leveraged in the market. Because
yeah,
the market's,
absolutely.
Over time, the market's just too darn volatile.
Yeah.
To count, I mean, I'm gonna put it this way. If I was, say, 10 years from retirement, and you put $850,000 in front of me, I will go, well, thank you very much. I can pay off probably all of my debt, but I got to keep working because I know what inflation can do. And right now, the inflation rate could be the calm before the storm.
Right. Right. And I agree with you. And I think that's sort of the interesting thing. But to further the point, she's too young to not have aggressive investments.
Yes.
That's the problem. She knows she needs to keep it aggressively. So she's going to be aggressive and keep all that money in the stock market and hope and roll the dice. People that are investors know that keeping all your eggs in one basket is not the best strategy. And so moving and having some different investments out there, her putting 10 or 15% into gold or silver in the event that the stock market pulls back, because what if there is a 20 or 30% pullback in the stock market? What is she going to do then? Then her business of, you know, retiring early, you know, her credibility could be shot because the stock market's going to pull back. What money is she going to use? Is she going to sell those stocks at 20 or 30% lower? She really can't afford to. She needs to be able to hold them for longer. And that's why, you know, we always talk about being diversified. That's why I'm always diversified.
Yeah, there you go.
And I do have money in the stock market. You know, and one of the things I wanted to discuss with you is something, is this Trump Truth Social app.
Sure.
And this stock, this DWAC stock. And I remember looking at this a few months ago. I think it came out maybe 2 months ago. And there's a lot of talk about it. And now this app is launched next month, and it's basically an app that was, you know, funded through Trump's people, and they are going to basically compete with Twitter. So Trump will be live on there. So Trump will have a forum again. It's going to be connected into Rumble, so Rumble will be providing the video. So there people are opening up new ways to communicate. And I think it's important that they're doing that. People want options out there. But I do think it's very interesting. So this stock, when it hit the market, came out at, you know, 20 to 25. It's sitting in the mid 80s right now. And it's, you know, this app's going to launch in the next week or two. Now, I will tell you, this is the risk of these things. There's a lot of articles out there that say as soon as this launches, it could drop up to 60% because, why do you think? Dave, why do you think it would drop 60% right after it launches?
Well, my best guess is too many people are in driving the value down, one thing. And then there's other related factors, too. We're looking at a debased currency, and I just think the whole market's unstable right now. And then you have the five investors are carrying the bulk of the profits?
Well, that's the other thing, too, is like what happens a lot of times is when there's a big push on some of these new stocks is there's going to be people that are going to want to take profit, right? There's going to be people that bought it at 20. If it raises from 80 to 85 to 120, 130, there's probably going to be a lot of people that want to sell. Now, the problem is the people that got in early will be able to sell earlier and faster. And so we've seen this a lot of times with AMC and a lot of these stocks where people have the right idea, but they're not able to capitalize the right way. So I'm not saying buy this stock. I'm not a stockbroker. I just thought it was interesting because we talk about, you know, conversation and social and what's happening in the world. And I just think, you know, this stock is sort of interesting. In all honesty, I am an owner of it. I think it's going to be a big one in the future, but I also do think it could drop 60%. It could go up to 100 and drop 60% initially because there's a lot of profit takers. But I don't have all my money in it. I dabbled a little bit in it because I think it's got some long-term potential. And I think that, you know, Twitter's had some problems and I think that they're, you know, we're going to see some diversification. We're running up to an election. So big picture, you know, having some different investments is really what gives me a lot of comfort as, you know, providing for my family that I'm not tied into one investment. Now, do I like where metals are based on what we're hearing out there? Of course, I like it. I like the physical aspect of it. You know, Turkey right now.
Before we go to metals, can I go back to Trump stock
absolutely.
For a second?
Yeah, absolutely.
I'd like to ask this question here. Do you think that they'll dabble in Bitcoin as an investment tool? I'm saying towards the Truth app. In other words, could Bitcoin become a part of this genre?
I think that what a lot of companies are done, like Twitter did, is they invested some of their money into Bitcoin.
That's why I asked that. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. I think what we have to look at first is it's not going to be profitable. It's not profitable right now. It's not going to be profitable for a long time. So you have to have some earnings to invest. The stock just can't go up. They need to have some capital to buy Bitcoin. I think, and I could be way off base, but I think they'll probably come out with their own crypto as opposed to buying another one. I think if it has enough push, they'll probably come up with their own. But my feeling about what's happening here is that the timing is really sort of interesting because you have what happened with Joe Rogan, and then you have Rumble that made a bid for Joe Rogan. They offered him $100 million, which I don't know if they even have $100 million.
I've asked that question too, yeah.
I mean, maybe they do, but I guess, you know, if you're going to get Joe Rogan, you find it somewhere. I'm sure somebody would invest. But so I think you have Rumble that's done a decent job sort of capturing the spillover from people that haven't been able to stay on some of the other platforms, and they're partnered up. So you have in what could be the best of both worlds. You got this sort of new Twitter that should be a little bit more open, and then you got Rumble that's more open to different creators, and you have them kind of combining together. So I think it'll be interesting to see, and you know, how that sort of plays out in terms of if that is the perfect sort of storm. I think that, you know, Twitter has a very specific type of user, and video channels like YouTube and Rumble have a very specific type of user. But if they can get both in one place, it should be interesting to see how that sort of plays out. The one thing I do know is it is extremely expensive to keep these kind of platforms open. So they'll have to get through that kind of run-up period. So
isn't YouTube financed because they've had that kind of problem with maintaining the platform?
YouTube is not a moneymaker for Google at all. They have that media library, and even recently, I don't know if you saw, but YouTube was creating their own content, and they basically cut that whole division completely out. They were creating their own videos and not videos, their own shows, and they've sort of gone away from that. And I think it's just because of they haven't seen how they can sort of monetize that, and they're just going back to what they've been doing before, which is just working with influencers. That's really been, because influencers are able to adjust quicker to the demand and really get out the videos that people want much faster than a typical production of a TV show or a movie. So they've cut that. So yeah, it's you know, YouTube is, as you know, it'll be interesting to see what happens with them over the next few years, because they're obviously looking at different ways to monetize. They have these new shorter videos that I think people, you know, obviously they're trying to mirror what TikTok is doing and get a little faster sort of content. But nothing has really proven to be super successful. It's just that they're the second largest search engine in the world, and obviously there's power in having that. So
That makes a lot. Well, thanks for answering that, because I, you know, I was wondering where this was sitting too, because knowing that YouTube is not enormously profitable because of the cost of the platform, I was trying to link that back into what Trump's people are doing. And I'm thinking, okay, will they maintain it for a long period of time if they have the same result?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's sort of the question behind it. So I think that what social platforms are going to be looking to do is create different ways to monetize and create different revenue streams. You've seen, obviously, another one, Facebook, obviously struggling significantly, having that big pullback recently. You know, they had that big sell-off. So a lot of these social platforms are struggling, but we'll see. You know, President Trump obviously was one of the reasons that Twitter was what it was, you know, for many years. So we'll see what he can do jumping on this new platform. And obviously he has an incentive, if he is going to go ahead and run for the election, he can kind of get the word out on this new network. So I have no idea where there's an
election law there that enters in. And I'll give you, I know here in Arizona, and I think it's a federal regulation if I'm not mistaken, but I had a friend, Ernie Hancock, who ran for office, and he had his radio show in Phoenix, and he had to give that up to run for office. And it was an FCC regulation. That's right. I remember it was FCC. I know, because I had to go in and host for him quite a bit. And so Ernie said, Dave, I need you. And he wasn't successful in his bid, so he came back to what he was doing. But the thing is, Colin, is I think that Trump's going to face that limitation too. But anyway, I want to shift over to gold for a second. We were going there anyway before I pulled us back into Trump. Go ahead and start with where you were going, because I know you're leading right to what I want to ask.
Yeah, so I mean, listen, it's a conversation out there. You know, gold sitting in the $1,800 range. Are a lot of investors weren't sure where things were going this year. It's been very choppy in the market, so people weren't sure what direction gold was going to go into. But you know, the good thing about gold, and people that are in the business know this, gold is not just jewelry anymore. It's not just sitting in Fort Knox or not sitting in Fort Knox. It's a metal that's being used in so many industries. For instance, you know, this Mars rover, they're using gold. Part of the way that they're going to get to Mars is part of the mechanism that they're using has gold in it, because it's such a unique metal. So you have all these uses. You have it being used in cancer research tremendously. If you can go out and read all the reports about that. And gold supply, based on all the new demand, can only go up by maximum 1.5% per year based on the amount of gold they're pulling out of the ground. So you have an item that the demand is growing 10, 15, 20 fold, but they can really only pull out a very small amount. And, you know, what's a very small amount? We're talking about 2 or 2.5 Olympic sized swimming pools of gold. That's all the gold in the whole world. And if you compare that to currency, you know, there's enough currency, you know, in US currency to, you know, to have, you know, five, you know, Statue of Liberties. I mean, if you stack all the dollars up and down, you know, those are some of the, to give some visuals of how many dollars are being printed and how much money is out there. So you're really dealing with an item that has a truly limited supply. And I think that gives people a lot of comfort. But these new uses for gold are definitely part of the reason that investors like the potential of it. And I think, you know, that's why we've seen some pretty tremendous demand. You know, the first January is usually a much slower month for us at Noble Gold, but it was a phenomenal month, really, because I think people are realizing what's going to happen. They're looking at their portfolios probably from the end of the year, and they're realizing they probably have too much money in the stock market, and so they're diversifying into metals.
Excuse me. It's so interesting you'd say that with January. For YouTube influencers across the board, the profits for advertising were down 60%.
Mm-hmm.
Did you know that?
I heard that. Yeah, I heard that statistic.
Here's where I was going with it, though. Here you got retail down 60%, and retail stores, same thing. I mean, the trend is the same across the economy, except with precious metals.
Right. Yeah, and usually we're down, I would say, year to year in January because you have a lot of spending in December. You know, with Christmas and the holidays and people are out of town and, you know, all those things that are happening. But I think that now more people that are working from home, I think they have more time to really look at their finances. So that's why I think there'd be like a little bit of a proverbial hangover in January, Dave. But I think now people are sort of settled. They're looking at their finances probably. Maybe if somebody looked at it once a month or once a quarter, they're probably looking at it once a week or, you know, maybe even more. So I think that, you know, people are shifting gears right now. And that's, you know, sort of picked up demand in terms of the physical metal. But yeah, it's definitely an interesting time. I mean, maybe the 1/10 ounce gold eagle could be pushing this too, the free coin that we're offering at Noble Gold.
I know that.
That's a nice perk for anyone that's looking to do this. And you know, that's a free coin, $300 coin. If you have a qualified IRA, you get that for free, which people love. So you know, I think there's a lot of reasons why people are doing it, but I do think people are really tuned in right now, and they're just thinking, you know, I got to make a shift. And so we've definitely seen an uptick since the first of the year.
Well, do you think the fears of a hyperinflated dollar are driving a lot of this too?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's, you know, I think that's a big part of it. I think that, you know, people knew that inflation was high. But now that the government's reporting it, it sort of gives it more credence. The thing that's sort of, I think that's going to be scary for a lot of people is this is probably the year that they're going to have to look at what they do and make sure that it keeps up with that inflation, right? I think that if your net worth and your money is not growing by that minimum 7 to 10% a year, you probably need to look at changing things up. And that's scary. I know a lot of people are scared by that. I've had conversations with friends that have been in great, comfortable jobs, and it's got a good work-life balance, and they're really enjoying it. But now they're looking at it and going, you know, I want work-life balance, but I can't make the same amount of money that I made before because everything's going up. The cost of everything's going up. So I think there's a shift in mindset this year. You know, the idea of having a side business or creating income on the side is something that a lot of people are putting to the forefront. But And it's going to continue. It's going to continue. People need to start thinking about those things. But, you know, the idea of retiring early with this kind of inflation is really out the window unless you significantly plan. And I think that's what a lot of people are focusing on right now.
And then you're back to the retired academic professor, excuse me, who has $850,000. Yeah, you're right. This is where these roads start to all come together, because yeah. Inflation is the monster. And see, to me, this is how I look at gold. I want you to act like you're my advisor for a second while we role play. Okay. By the way, I'm a customer of Noble Gold, so in the interest of disclosure here, and I did it not because I wanted to turn around and just make a quick dump profit like you might do in the stock market. I took it because I saw the reckless spending in our government. And I don't see it ending. And now that we're facing a potential war with certainly an arms buildup, even if we don't have a war, that's going to worsen the situation. And so, and then you had the lockdowns and, you know, all this stuff combined. I said, I need to have gold as a hedge against the destruction of the dollar, the erosion of the dollar. Because I know if you keep $100,000 in the bank, see, I believe the inflation rate's 15% based on old CPI figures if they were plugged in. Then I've lost $15,000 this year.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and it's happening across the globe. I mean, one thing we don't really have enough time to talk about, but you know, in Turkey, they're trying to encourage citizens in Turkey to turn in their gold that's been sitting under the mattress, which is literally for a lot of people that's what it is, because they're trying to fight off. In Turkey, they have almost 50% inflation. So they're trying to get people actively to turn in their gold to try to hedge that back. Now, that sort of reminds us of what happened here in 1933, right? That's what they wanted people to do, is turn in their gold because we were in a depressionary period and they were trying to find ways to raise money. And having people turn in their gold did that. But people that turned in their gold back then were shocked by what happened, because they valued gold in the low 20s, and then within a year they recycled the price and it went over $30 an ounce. So everyone that turned in their gold and was sort of listening to the government at that point got hurt pretty dramatically, and they lost out at almost a 40% uptick of what they could have got the year after. So, you know, these things are happening in the world. The currencies are falling apart, and so they're trying to find ways to hold it back, hold back the dam. So people just need to be patient right now. And you know, I've had people call me and go, "Hey, I bought gold from you guys at, you know, 1400, and it hit 1900 or 2000. You know, it's a time." And you know, obviously, people love to take a profit, but I do think, if the money isn't needed, it's not the time. Now is the time to continue to buy, continue to hold, and you know, just keep preparing for what's going to happen in the future.
Yeah, there's no question this is the way people have to go, but it's such a change in our thinking. This is why this show is important. This is such a critically important show, because it's an educational show. Because what people think is make money, put it in the bank, save, do a little investment, but the bulk of your savings is in the bank, and that is the most stupid thing you could ever do. What percentage? Right. I know you have to have a working margin here, you know, in the bank, you know, so that you pay your bills and so forth. So what percentage would you recommend that people put into the bank today with regard to having cash?
I mean, I think you need at least 6 to 8 months to survive in your account. That's what I would recommend. But beyond that, you know, everything else should be invested out there as much as possible. And, you know, that's typically sort of the rule of thumb that I've always lived by. But you don't typically need more than that sort of available. Now, if you're not diversified, you might, because, you know, like we discussed earlier with the woman that has all her money in the stock market, if she doesn't have 6 to 8 months ready to live on, and the stock market drops by 20 or 25%, the worst thing she could do would be to sell some of that stock to live on at that moment. So I think that's why, you know, having some different assets out there sort of to protect yourself. And I think you need to have a lot of safety assets, but then you need to, you know, look at some things and watch the news and see if there's some things out there that could go up 10, 20, 30, 40, 50, 100x. I mean, I think Bitcoin, you know, right now, another asset that I'm a fan of is undervalued. I think that it's, the demand is there. I think that, you know, obviously it went on a big run and hit $67,000, but with all the usage of Bitcoin increasing, with all the funds, you know, all those ETFs that are being created have to have Bitcoin. And people say, well, why do they have to have Bitcoin? It's because if you're a fund, if you create an ETF right now, you have to put some safe assets in there. And if this market, crypto market, is so new, there's only a few assets that you could legitimately say are safe. And Bitcoin is one of them. So if you have all these big funds, if you have all these big funds that are going to have to buy Bitcoin, and they're going to have to buy Ethereum too, they're going to hold it. They're going to hold it. It's just like your mutual fund when they buy Microsoft or when they buy Apple. They're going to hold those stocks. It's the same thing. So there are some stuff out there that could double. So you need to look, you need to have a few of those that could get that 10, 20, 30x return to balance out your safe portfolio of gold and silver. And so that's what I would recommend.
This is what people don't know. They're too worried about teaching kids about woke in the schools rather than how to make money. You know, right. And listen, I'm not laughing at this. I've taught everything from ninth grade to postgraduate university level, and I still have friends that are in the business, and this nonsense has even penetrated into the university system, and people just generally are not taught how to make money. And the other thing that I've always looked at, Colin, is, remember I heard an economist say one time, it's not as important as the money you make, it's the money that you keep.
Right.
And I heard that in relation to having a good tax plan, but that applies here too.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's absolutely the case. And I think that's why, you know, people today are so heavily focused on creating those different income streams, diversifying their portfolio, finding tax advantages, you know, any kind of tax advantage that they can and they should. I mean, anyone that's, you know, had a little bit better year this year than last year should be, you know, diving into any kind of tax savings that you can. But yeah, you got to try to keep as much as you can and use it for yourself, use it for your family, whatever you got to do to keep it out of the government's hands. And you know, obviously a certain amount has to keep the lights on and keep our services going. But for the most part, enough of that stuff is already paid and the rest needs to be focused on you as an investor, as a person, as a family person to feed your family. And I think that's the continuing strategy today of where people are gonna improve themselves. That's the improvement that everybody needs to see, is finding different income streams, finding different investments, you know, finding all the write-offs that they can, and then continuing that strategy going forward, relying on 401ks, relying on, you know, the government pension, relying on all that stuff. If it's there, it's there, great, it's gravy, but you should only look at it as gravy now. All that stuff could go in a second. Social Security could be gone in a second. So it's important to protect yourself right now.
Well, we talked about this in our pre-air discussion, and I think we need to bring this up, even though we're kind of deviating from the script here. But I think it's important to know Nancy Pelosi is seriously floating the idea of rolling retirement accounts into Social Security. That's because they've robbed it for so long that they don't have the three workers you need to push through one senior citizen through Medicare and Social Security. I think they're at about 2.7, if I remember right. So they need to steal money from somewhere else. And that's how I look at it. This is theft.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. That's a scary proposition. I don't like that on a million different levels. It doesn't make any sense. People need to be able to manage some of their tax-free money. And, you know, the numbers are simple. If you started an IRA early and you're able to compound the returns, you're going to get to the number at retirement that you need to survive. Whereas Social Security, and, you know, for someone that's 25 years old, even if they got the most at $3,000, which means the most amount of Social Security you can get right now is about $3,000. That means you have to wait until you're 70 years old, which most people don't do. That $3,000 in 40 or 50 years will be worth nothing. So, and it's not going to go up enough. Whereas the same money invested right now, if you took out that Social Security money, you put it in an IRA and you invested in assets making 10, 15, 20%, and you compound that money over 30, 40 years, you will be sitting, I just did the numbers with one of my employees. He'd be sitting, he's 25, he'd be sitting at almost $2 million invested, ready for him to do whatever he wants at retirement age. So you combine that with the pittance of the $3,000, then it's okay. Then it's enough money.
Bingo.
But to think that $3,000 is going to keep you running in 30 or 40 years from now, it's not going to work. Even my father, who's 76 years old, who still works for us. By the way, speaking of the FIRE movement, my father is 76 years old. He still works. He knows he's going to live, you know, hopefully another 20, 30 years. He likes to work. He likes to make money. He's got people that he takes care of. He's still working and he gets Social Security. So, you know, this is what it's going to take to keep the lights on. So, you know, people got to find something they like. They got to find something they're good at and continue to move it forward.
Well, you know, you're so on the money. And I'm going to use myself as an example to what you're talking about. Now I'm wiser and I've been able to make some money. So I was able to go out and get gold and silver and Bitcoin and so forth. So I was able to do those things, Colin. But if I could do this over again, I retired at a relatively early age from academia, and I took my retirement in payments, you know, a monthly allocation. And what a horrible mistake that was, because if I were to do this today, I'd have taken the lump sum payment and gone out and bought precious metals.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's what I should have done.
Yeah, taking control of it. Yeah, but you know, but in same regard, what you did, Dave, is you went back and found your true passion, and you're working and you're bringing in income and you're spreading the word and you're doing something you love. That's what it's going to take. That's what it's going to take today. Is that people need to realize that companies and you can work at a job, you can do great, but eventually you're going to have to find some other revenue sources kind of get to that next level. and you have to adapt. I mean, look, it's, you know, we're on YouTube, we're on the radio, we're on different, you know, if you think one of these platforms is going to stay around, I mean, they're all changing, they're all moving. So you constantly have to adapt. But ultimately, the thing that you've done with this show is that you've created a message that resonates with people. They enjoy it, and that will continue forever, you know. Well, and that's the beauty behind it.
I appreciate that, but if it wasn't for this, I think I'd be looking at real serious problems. Because see, the retirement, this is what people need to grasp. And listen, I'm not talking down to anybody in the audience, please understand that, because I made a mistake of ignorance too, and we all do. So my mistake, I was able to correct it, but a lot of people don't. They get to their retirement age, whether it's in their 50s or their 60s, and then they realize, oh my gosh, this is fixed income, and inflation is killing this, absolutely destroying it.
And
that's what people don't see. And like I said, and I'm sure you advise people to do this. I have, with my younger colleagues that I've worked with that are now at retirement, I tell them, don't make the mistake I made. Take a lump sum and take a good segment of it and buy gold and buy lots of it. And they said, why? And I had to sit here and explain it to PhD college professors. I mean, this, and that's, no one's taught really how to make money and how all this stuff works. And it's not really complicated. And the system is really designed to impoverish you as you get into old age.
Yeah. Well, I think a lot of it is that a lot of the old norms are gone, but we're moving in the right direction. And I think people today are asking the right questions. They're really looking at what all their options are. So I feel confident about where we're going, but ultimately we all go in the same direction. So if we're moving in the right direction as a group, as the United States, and people are realizing that they have to rely on themselves, they cannot rely on some of these fixed income situations because they're not going to be there. They're not going to be enough to survive. And if they just look at it as like a gift that maybe will be there, I think that attitude will be better going forward than just sort of relying on it. So, you know, to sum up, Dave, you know, if anybody wants to talk to anybody on my team at Noble Gold, the phone number is 877-646-5347.
Colin, can I add something in there real quick?
Sure. Yeah,
okay.
Absolutely.
Because I am a member of Noble Gold and I believe so much in it. And I come back for tweaks and I'm due for another one here. We have a website here that we have set up and it's goldbeforelate.com. And it's something, it goes directly and you can request free material. And Colin, I want to say something too. The first time I ever did business with Noble Gold, I thought, okay, I had this angst because no one was trying to close the deal with me.
Right.
And I'm thinking, okay, I want to do this now. I'm convinced this is a great company. I have people. This is why I jumped into Noble Gold, too. We had people in our audience that did it based on our ads when I advertised before I became a customer. And they said, Dave, thank you for doing this. This is awesome. And I'm thinking, okay, I'm ready. I'm convinced, absolutely convinced. This is a great deal. This is what I need to be doing. It's what I should have done years ago. And I had to say, okay, I'm ready now. I'm ready. Your staff is so unaggressive, yeah. But yet at the same time, very informative.
Yeah. Well, we know it's a big decision, right? That's the biggest thing. That's what I tell people. I said, whether someone's doing, you know, 4,000 or whether they're doing a million, every decision with someone's money that they've worked hard for is important. And so we want to treat everybody with the same respect that we would be treated, and we don't want people to be rushed. And that's part of the reason that I started Noble Gold, is that I knew there was a gap of this sort of respect to the consumer, and it's happening across the board of financial services. Now, there's great people out there too. There's great people, but for the most part, people don't want to spend time anymore with anybody. They're rushing off the phone. And so that's the number one thing with everybody at the company, from the people that answer the phone to the IRA department to, you know, the sales team, anybody. It's, we spend time with people and we give them information and then they make a decision on their own if it's right. And I think that's how people should be treated.
Yeah, I agree. So with that website address I gave out, Gold Before Late, or the number 877-646-5347, you can get free material sent to you. And this is what I tell my audience quite often. I say, get the free material if you're not sure. Or I said, or if you need someone to explain it to you, you'll do that too. And
yeah.
And that's because I had real questions, because this was a first-time venture for me when I did this in precious metals. And the people there were just terrific. They take all the time you need to answer the questions. And I wanted to stress that. The customer service that Noble Gold provides is second to none, and I'm living proof of this.
Yeah, thank you, Dave. We appreciate it. Appreciate everybody. Looking forward to talking to everybody, and have a great day. We'll definitely we'll talk soon.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Colin. Great talking to you. Ladies and gentlemen, stay tuned. We'll be back after a word, and we have only 3 or 4 minutes of programming left, and we want to thank Colin for joining us and really take advantage of Noble Gold. Thanks so much, Colin.
Thanks, Dave.
My goodness gracious, what an interview. Welcome back, everybody. Thank you so much for staying with us, and thanks to Colin Plume for being generous with his time. He's the CEO of Noble Gold. I really encourage you to go to goldbeforelate.com and start taking the steps you need to take care of your portfolio. Well, I'm a big MMA fan. I like combat sports, but I have to really question whether or not I want to stay with UFC. I may have to go Bellator or some of these other organizations. And the reason why is Dana White has no intestinal fortitude. He's a sissy. He's bent the knee to the mainstream media and to woke ESPN. I mean, let's look at the facts. Whoopi Goldberg goes off on Jewish people and the Holocaust. And not only did she show despicable ethnic prejudice, but she showed incredible stupidity about world history. It was embarrassing. Embarrassing. But for that heinous violation of the public trust, she only got a 2-week suspension. Joe Rogan, wrong for using the N-word in any context. Can't do it. Just can't do it. There's been too much damage done in the past. I understand why people get up in arms over this. But number one, he apologized. Okay? Whoopi apologized. She gets to come back in 2 weeks. Joe Rogan said, I'm sorry, here's the context. I still don't think that matters. But he was trying to explain about how I didn't really mean it towards black people as a group. I actually believe his explanation, but his use of the term still inappropriate, even if that was his mindset and he wasn't trying to be pejorative against all blacks. I get that, but he deserves some sanction. Now, he apologized. Whoopi apologized. Whoopi's apology is accepted. She comes back after a 2-week suspension. Joe Rogan, they want him gone from everything. And here's where I have a problem with Dana White. He first came out and says, I'm supporting Joe Rogan over vaccine mandates and Dr. Malone's interview and Alex Jones' interview and so forth and so on. Okay, that was pretty good, Dana. But then he bent the knee when it came to the other. But here's what bothers me. It's not that he bent the knee and took Joe Rogan off the most recent UFC middleweight title fight between Whitaker and Aldense, or however you say the guy's name. I don't really have an issue of him taking him off the fight, Joe Rogan, for color commentary, but he lied about it. Well, there was a scheduling conflict. What a bunch of BS. Seriously, is that the best lie you can come up with, Dana White, as you bend the knee to the mainstream media? He lives 3 hours from the fight. This is a major event that was scheduled months in advance. And that's your primary go-to guy for color commentary. And at the last minute, he had a scheduling conflict? Really? Was he giving birth to a baby too? I mean, what a load of nonsense. So, Rogan's already had 71 episodes canceled by Spotify. I think he had to take the $100 million offer from Rumble and go with the money with no thoughts of censorship. But I do think there should have been a price to pay. And if Dana White would have had the balls to stand up and say, hey, what Joe did was wrong, he apologized, we're doing the equivalent of the 2-week suspension because we don't have these fights every day, so we're taking Joe off the color commentary for the upcoming middleweight title fight on February the 12th, if he would have done that, I would have respected that. But he has this image of a tough guy, but when it came to being a tough guy, he was like a little mouse in the corner. And here's really the bad thing. Oh, jeez, this is incredible. A reporter at the press conference after they had the weigh-in. So you have the two combatants, which really handled themselves in a very dignified way. Except for a little choice of language here on the part of the champion. But Dana White was asked, Dana, I have a question about Joe Rogan. And he turns away and walks away from the microphone because he's such a sissy, he won't answer the question and stand by his decision that I'm going to bend the knee to woke ESPN. Okay? And the champion said, whoa, wait a minute. I'll take that. I'll take that question about Joe. I'm black, which means I can comment on this. He said, Joe Rogan is the most respectful, humble MF-er, and I really like him. He stuck up for Joe. He says, you know, basically saying he made a mistake. Okay, so what? So what? I know how he is as a man. I know how he treats me, blah, 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 blah. This champion had the guts to do what Dana White was too sissy to do, wouldn't even stand up for his own organization. That's why I'm probably going to be looking for other places to watch these fights, and it ain't going to be on the UFC card. And I'll tell you what, Dana, there's a lot of people that feel like I do. And you had us hooked. You really did. You had us hooked, but you, sir, are a sissy. You cowered in the face of wokeness. You could have delivered a punishment, let him come back, Whoopi set the standard for this, right? And you wouldn't have been any worse for the wise. I mean, absolutely ridiculous, Dana White. Shame on you for bending the knee and then lying about it. And that and having to have your middleweight champion come out and defend you because you didn't have the balls to speak up. Anyway, ladies and gentlemen, that's it. I mean, really, I got to tell you, I'm so upset by this. Hey, don't forget to get your storable food at preparewithdave.com. Really, really important. And we want to thank you for joining us here. And thanks again to Colin Plume for a great interview. Get your gold, ladies and gentlemen. It ain't going to be long till you're going to need it. See you back here next time.